Live from El Zonte, El Salvador, aka Bitcoin Beach, this is the Van Willem Shortsnado. Today, we're doing a special episode. I think I'm going to call it the Bitcoin Beach special or something. I'm doing this episode without Shorts. Instead, I have Nicholas Bertie, right?
Yes.
Correct. Welcome, Nicholas. So you're going to be my Shorts today.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Nicholas, can you introduce? Yeah, so that means, by the way, we're going to need you to do the puns, because usually Shorts does the puns. So I hope you brought some good puns for this episode.
I'm not sure what puns means, but I will try.
They're like the word jokes.
Okay. I'm not the best at, you know, words jokes.
You got it, Nicholas. I have faith in you. All right, first of all, Nicholas, for our listeners, explain who you are. Please, introduce yourself.
Hi, so you will guess with my accent, I'm a French guy. I have lived a couple of years in the US, and I've become a nomad last year, and I've been working on open source software. And I've been building a wallet that is called the Bitcoin Beach wallet that is used by the community here in El Zonte. I'm currently living in El Zonte as of now. And our goal is
maybe really quickly, you know, we don't need to dwell on this. There's other podcasts on this specific topic, but you know, explain real quick what El Zonte is and what's going on here.
Yeah, so El Zonte is a small village in El Salvador. There is about 3,000 people here. And it's overall a poor village, right? The average salary here is about $400 per month. What makes, you know, El Zonte quite special is that it's the project where Bitcoin Beach started. And Bitcoin Beach is an initiative that involves Bitcoin, as the name suggests, and how to use maybe Bitcoin in a local community and to get those people out of poverty. The challenge with El Salvador in general is that there is a lot of requirement to open a bank account. And so if you're not wealthy enough, basically, you know, banks are not very interested into, you know, providing banking services to you. And so here, you know, people typically don't have a bank account. And on average, 70% of the population in El Salvador don't have a bank account. And so what we are doing here is that, first there has been a donor that have contributed some Bitcoin like 2 years ago. And, you know, this is how the initiative gets really started. On our side, what we have been doing is a wallet to help, you know, the adoption of Bitcoin. And I guess this is what we'll be discussing more today.
Yeah, so you're the developer and you run a company as well, right? The wallet is developed by your company, essentially.
Yeah. So we have a company called Galloy Money, and we are developing open source software, and the idea is that we think there is, you know, type of wallet that we can bring to the market, which is like what we call shared custody wallet, and that use Lightning for payment. And our goal is to develop open source software, you know, for the community. This is what we are doing, yes.
Yeah, so the interesting thing about it is you came to El Zonte, or did you already start working on the wallet before you came here, or what was the order of things there?
Yeah. So I started working on the wallet initially, like late 2019, you know, initially as a non-custodial wallet, and after I moved to the shared custody model, I decided to dedicate my time to, you know, the Bitcoin Beach community as a, you know, proof of concept early 2020, and I came here about 7-8 months ago for the first time. So the wallet was already starting to be here when I came here. I really wanted to come here to see the people using the wallet on the ground.
Yeah, exactly. That's sort of one of the interesting things about this wallet and your efforts, I think, is that, first of all, like you mentioned, people here, for them, it's not even really a luxury. It's kind of a necessity, or at least, you know, they can't get a bank account, and this is actually like a digital solution for them, first of all. And second of all, you came here personally to meet these people and speak with these people and see what they actually needed, what, you know, what their experience was with using Lightning and how you could improve that experience for the people in this actual village, right?
Yeah, correct. I believe it's important to, you know, meet the people that use your product generally, right? Whatever you're doing.
Yeah, so one of the things you discovered while you were here was that correct me if I'm wrong, but is that the existing Lightning solutions, the existing wallets, Lightning wallets, excuse me, let's say just the non-custodial Lightning wallets, they had their limitations. Is that right?
So when I was coming here, the people were using Wallet of Satoshi, so it was a custodial wallet. But I believe the way on our side we start thinking about the wallet initially, like close to two years ago, is that on my side I start, I live with a non-custodial wallet, and I was trying to experiment with it, and I had the model of like open the channel of the fly, where like maybe you as a user you download this app, and maybe you don't have yet any UTXO, any on-chain or off-chain balance, but like the first time you receive your off-chain payment, your Lightning payment, you will basically the wallet provider will open a channel on the fly to you. And so I experimented with it for a couple of months. And then my thinking was like, it's hard to scale because from the wallet provider standpoint, each time there is a new user, you need to provide liquidity to this user. And so so you need to have this upfront liquidity, right, to provide that. And the more you grow, the faster you go, like the harder the liquidity challenge, which is difficult. And so,
You don't need to, right? You can also open channels where the channels are funded only on the side of the user. So they can't receive payments in that case unless and until they've made payments themselves.
Yeah.
Which is another limitation, of course.
Yeah, so this would be maybe, the way if you have a LND, node, and so this is how it will typically work, is that, okay, you need to open a channel and then all the liquidity is on your side, and then after you spend some money on this channel, then, you can receive payment afterwards. So, this is a vanilla Lightning node, how this works. An improvement based on that is the idea that, hey, maybe you will be connected to a wallet provider like a node or a LSP. And basically, to make the experience better, like the first time you receive a Lightning payment, this is the time a channel is being opened. And the channel is not opened by you because you don't have phone yet. The channel is being opened by the other party of the channel that, we sent you the money that, they receive from the channel, and maybe they will retain some, sats as a, payment to open the channel. But they still need to provide a lot of liquidity, basically. And this is a model that I think...
So that are sort of the two options, I guess. Either you allow anyone to open a channel, but it's only funded on their end, so they can't receive payments at first, or you can offer the liquidity, but that's hard to scale because then you need a lot of liquidity to offer all across all of your user base.
Yeah, yeah. And there is, like, to my knowledge, three wallets that are doing this, Moon Wallet and Buoys and Phoenix. And I think they have, Eclair, to my knowledge, Phoenix have a lot of success, right? But I still see this as something that will be hard to scale, like especially in an area like El Zonte. And the reason is, so on average, the median balance, the median balance, I believe, in a wallet is about $10. So, it's really like...
You mean here or do you mean in general?
In here, the people that have been using the Bitcoin Beach wallet. And so $10 is like, it depends on what are the fees on chain, but, it's often, above the price you will pay to open a channel, right? And so this is the limitation, basically.
Right. What you're saying is that I think you're saying two different things. First of all, there's a challenge on how to start an account, start a wallet. That's one challenge because you have two choices that both aren't ideal. And then the second challenge is that if people really don't have a lot of money, then even opening one Lightning channel is a lot of money. If you only have $10 and fees are $2, then opening a Lightning channel is still a lot of money, essentially. So there's two problems there, right?
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. And those problems compound, right? So, but that's correct.
So, and then the other option, if we go to the other end of the spectrum, so to say, is to have custodial wallets. And these also exist.
Yeah, and so probably the first wallet that is known in the space is Wallet of Satoshi. And this is a wallet that was being used as a main wallet until we start, you know, working on the Bitcoin Beach wallet here. And custodial wallet, you know, have the benefits of, like, it's probably the best UX today, and probably also the one that have, I wouldn't say the lowest fees, but like a lot of the on-chain management, you know, like it, you can share the capital that is required to open a channel and close a channel, you know, if you have like 1,000 users and you have one channel, you know, then basically the cost of creating a channel and closing a channel is shared across, you know, 1,000 users. So obviously the cost per user is very greatly reduced.
Yeah, just for listeners that might not know this, non-custodial, what we were just discussing a minute ago, simply means that you can always claim the funds in your Lightning wallet on chain if you want. At any point, you can just say, okay, I want my funds now, and then you're getting it to your own on-chain address. Custodial, you know, this is powered by, you know, the cryptography and the technology of Lightning itself. Custodial means you're essentially giving up that control to the wallet provider or whoever, because, you know, if you want to withdraw your funds, they're still going to have to actually give you the funds. They're going to have to cooperate with that. They are actually controlling the keys. So the problem in that sense is, you know, it sort of goes against the Bitcoin mantra of not your keys, not your coins, but it offers these benefits that the liquidity problem we just mentioned is immediately solved. Essentially, you kind of just create an account at the wallet provider, and the fee problem is solved because you don't need any on-chain fee to get started. Is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah. Right. So, and then the, like I mentioned, the downside is you're actually trusting the wallet provider a bit.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
So you have with the Beach Wallet, you're going for some kind of, what you're calling it, shared custody, right? So it's still custodial, but you're trying to limit the risk a little bit. Is that right? So maybe you can explain what that means.
Yeah, so from the user perspective, the wallet is custodial, so they will open a wallet the same way they will do with a custodial wallet, and they will have an account. The reason we talk about shared custody is because, so the wallet, there is two parts to the wallet. There is a off-chain, there is a cold storage and hot storage. And so the hot storage is basically a Lightning node, a LND node. When there is a single key for it, this is how Lightning works today, but there is only a tiny portion of the fund in this hot wallet. The major part of the fund are in a cold storage, which is good for security reason.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something quite unique with Bitcoin that, you know, maybe doesn't exist with like the fiat system, for instance, where you could have a multi-sig and you could have different members of the community that have, you know, the signature. So here's the idea that you, instead of like trusting maybe a company when you use like a custodial product, here you could trust the member of your community, you know, to maintain the key and to make sure they keep the, you know, the key in a good shape and they don't lose it. And so here you basically not trusting a company, you're trusting, you know, people in your community, basically.
Yeah, although this is not, I understand this is not something you can actually verify in the wallet, or there's no way to make sure that this is actually happening. So in that sense, you are still trusting the words of you that it is being held by multiple people. Is that right?
Correct. And we're actually thinking about this, how to, like, there is a question, should the people that hold the key be known or not?
Right.
And it's interesting to think about it. Like, if you think about, okay, you want to bring the trust, you know, to the system, then you will publish, you know, who owns the key, basically. And then you can, and maybe, you know, those members can publish, you know, the public key, and, you know, and then you can verify the fund or, you know, available. But if you publish who on the key, it's also like it creates a new security risk where, like, okay, you know, the different people that have the key of this wallet, you know, are this and this and this.
Yeah. Even if it's a 3 out of 5 or a 6 out of 10 or whatever it is, if you publish who they are, then, you know, now you know exactly which 3 or which 6 people you need to extort.
Correct.
So there's benefit in not sharing that information, but that does increase the trust in, that's the trust rate of, now you're trusting that there are actually three out of five people that are holding the keys and you don't know who they are. So just a promise in that sense.
Exactly. Yeah. And so far this is, we go for the, you know, it's not published who owns the key, but yeah, it's something we are thinking about.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say, before we move on, so I've used the Bitcoin Beach wallet while I'm here. I've also used other wallets, and I will say, I personally like it a lot. There is the trust trade-off, and you know, it does go against the mantra of Bitcoin. But I've used other Lightning wallets, and I like other Lightning wallets as well. But you know, I make a payment, and I'm standing there at the merchant, waiting to get my bottle of water or whatever it is. And it can take half a minute or longer for a payment route to be found. While with Bitcoin Beach wallet, if they use the same wallet, we'll get into that in a bit, actually. I'm sort of jumping the gun here. But it does work so much faster. You really are done within 3 seconds, which is nice. And I guess the other thing, that it makes sense in a community like this, I think, to use a setup like we were just describing, especially because it's small. If there's, you know, if there's 10 million users, maybe, you know, and there's a lot of money involved, and out of these 10 million users, almost no one knows the actual owner of the wallet, you know, that at that point, it's starting to sound less smart to me. But here in a village of 3,000 people, and even though you don't know exactly who knows who owns the public keys, there's not that much money involved all in all. And people know to find you probably. And they know we're recording this in the Hope House. You know, if something goes, which is like a community house for the Bitcoin community here, you know, people can at least come here and ask what's going on. It's a more, you know, on a small scale, it probably makes, it kind of makes sense to do this way, I think. Or at least it's, the trade-off is acceptable in my personal view. One other solution to mitigate this problem of the custodial solution is to have proof of reserves. Is this something the Bitcoin Beach wallet has?
So we don't have proof of reserve today, but it's something that is high on our priority list. You know,
right.
And I think it's very complementary to the fact that multiple people in the community have keys for the multisig wallet, for the cold storage. Proof of reserve, you know, is aiming to solve a different issue. If you think about Mongox, for instance, what we, I believe, now know is that over time, you know, fund has been drained from the wallet, you know, for like a year or so. Like, it has been a slow process of like depleting the current wallet of you know, these exchanges. And if they had something like a proof of reserve, you know, the day like suddenly there is fund missing, like it would be known, right? And there will not be the wallet or the exchange that will continue to operate if proof of reserve was here. So it doesn't mean that if you have proof of reserve, suddenly, you know, one day from the next, you know, the fund will disappear and people who have the key, you know, will take away the money. But it means that, you know, if something bad were happening, like, you will know it right away and you will not end up in a situation where maybe, hey, there is like some money left, but, you know, maybe there is enough money to keep it going, which is a bad thing eventually, because then maybe the people at the end, which is the case for the Mongox, I believe it has been ongoing for months.
Yeah, essentially, it's true that whoever is holding the keys for the Bitcoin Beach wallets right now, they could get into a collective boating accident still, and the money would be gone. That's still true, even with proof of reserves. What's not true with proof of reserves is that they could run a fractional reserve banking type of system for months or years. That would be impossible, ideally, at least. So how you say it's high on your priority list? Do you have an idea? Can you explain as simple as possible how that would work or what that would look like?
Yeah. So the idea of proof of reserve is you have, when you have a wallet, you have assets and liability. So your assets are your UTXO and maybe the fund you have in your Lightning wallet. So you have a channel, and it mean, you know, you have money on your side of the channel. So all this is constitute your assets. And you have the liability, which is how much money you owe to each user of your wallet. And basically, proof of reserve is you try to prove that you have enough money in your assets to cover your liability. And so on the asset side, the way you can prove you have some assets is you have one UTXO, or, you know, a couple of UTXO, and for each UTXO, you should have a private key associated with this UTXO, and you can send a message, hey, you know, out of today, this UTXO belongs to this wallet. And like this, you can sum, you can do it for each UTXO, you can sum how much money you have in your, for your assets.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you prove on the liability...
So in that way, it would be publicly known which UTXOs, which Bitcoins are, belong to the Bitcoin Beach wallet in this case.
Yes, correct. Right. And they, I believe...
On the Bitcoin blockchain itself, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I believe there will be improvement to that with like some zero knowledge proof scheme, which I'm not deep into it, but I think there is a solution for that to like try to prove that you have, you know, enough reserve without showing how much, you know, money you owe, right? Because the reason I believe why a lot of, you know, no one have really adopted proof of reserve is because, you know, no exchange wants really to publicly state, you know, which UTXO they own, basically.
CoinFloor, I think, does it. They have the proof reserve check regularly.
Okay. Okay, so...
but this is zero knowledge proof. That's maybe even further into the future. Let's stick with just the basics of proof reserves.
And so... You know, you prove how much assets you have, you know, it can become, in that case, public information.
Mm-hmm.
On the liability side, the way it works is, okay, you have, let's say you have 5 users in your wallet and each of them have, you know, 0.1 BTC. And so you want to construct a Merkle tree where at the top you will have 0.5 BTC. And you want to show that on the leaf of the tree, each user, their balance has been accounted into the total that is shown in the at the root of the Merkle tree. And so, yeah, you can construct this, you know, Merkle tree, and basically every user will be able, maybe using the mobile app, will be able to log in and say, hey, is my balance, you know, in this total? And so... there is a cryptographic proof to show that, yes, you know, this balance, which is 0.5, you know, my balance, which is 0.1, has been included in this total. And the general idea here is that if enough people check it, you know, statistically, you will have a very high likelihood of, yes, you know, like, there has been no check that has not been verified. Therefore, you know, it's very likely there is a fully reserved operation, right?
These are these kinds of things that are much easier to explain with a little bit of a drawing, which you just made for me half an hour ago. But yeah, the basic idea is that you're sharing the Merkle path. Hopefully, listeners will know what the Merkle tree is. If not, this is going to be over their head anyways. So yeah, you give every user the Merkle path, and the Merkle path doesn't only include the hashes, which any Merkle path does, but it also includes the amounts. And therefore, you can sort of add up that, yeah, that your amount was included in total. And if enough users do that, and like you said, statistically, if you're trying to cheat, someone will figure it out. Someone will find out that their amount wasn't in the total. So it's not a hard proof for any individual user, but collectively, if enough people do it, I don't know, maybe 10% is enough, or I have no idea. There's probably statistics wizards out there that would have a better grip on that. But if enough people do it, then you get a sense, then you know pretty sure that the proof of reserves proves that the reserves are there, right?
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So, but this is not in the Bitcoin Beach wallet yet.
No.
This is part of the long priority list.
Yeah.
as every wallet has, so I know.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break from that episode. I want to tell you guys about our sponsor. It is Bitcoin 2022 conference. I am sure you saw the videos. You may have been there in person. Bitcoin 2021 was an absolute smashing success. It was the biggest conference in Bitcoin history, crypto history, whatever history of the digital asset sphere. Bitcoin is number one, and the Bitcoin 2021 conference is number one with a bullet. It was an absolutely incredible time. I was working my ass off the whole time, but I got to meet so many incredible community members. And I think the best testament to how amazing Bitcoin 2021 was not just all of the amazing, you know, accolades and compliments that I got personally and our team got, but also it's the skin in the game in Bitcoin 2022. We have already sold close to 1,500 tickets. That is more than 10% of the people, everyone who went to Bitcoin 2021 have already purchased tickets to Bitcoin 2022. We have not released a date. We have not released a city. We have not released anything. That is the biggest compliment. That is the biggest skin in the game of the community being down for this conference. Bitcoin 2022 is going to be bigger than Bitcoin 2021. It is going to be better than Bitcoin 21 in every single way. And we are going to be bringing you the best opportunity to mingle with the biggest, the baddest, the most Bitcoin people on the planet. So join the revolution. Go to b.tc/conference. Get your tickets today. I don't know what the ticket prices are. They are going up. I think they're $249 right now. We just rolled out fiat ticket purchases. All the tickets purchased before today were all purchased in BTC. So get it, guys. Get it. Get this ticket. Be at Bitcoin 2022. See you there. Bitcoiners, I want to tell you guys about The Deep Dive. The Deep Dive is a new premium newsletter from the Bitcoin Magazine team in conjunction with my man, BTCization, Dylan LeClaire. Dylan is such a multifaceted and wide-ranging analyst. He does everything from on-chain analytics to macro analysis to hash rate and all that kind of good stuff. He does it all. He breaks down everything that's happening every single day with his daily dive. He's going to dive into what is happening in the market that day. So that way you don't have to pay attention to Twitter. You don't have to pay attention to anything else. You can just pay attention to The Deep Dive, and he has you covered. And at the end of the week, guess what? You get a weekly recap. And at the end of the month, hey, we have a freaking report, a beautiful PDF breaking down all the activity of that entire month, what it means for Bitcoin, what you can expect moving forward. The Bitcoin market is going to moon. We are here to make sure that we maximize your stack. Go to members.bitcoinmagazine.com to sign up today. And if you use promo code BITS, you can get 1 month for free. So again, The Deep Dive, I've been checking it out every day, and you should too. Back to the show.
Okay, yeah. So let's get to more the user experience side of things. I already mentioned that I actually really like using the Bitcoin Beach Wallet here because it's just fast. And this is part of the custodial thing, I think, where all of these merchants in this town, and there are a lot of merchants in this town, you know, a lot of pupusa shops, which is like the local dish, or just these tiny corner shops or restaurants, or lots of people are actually accepting Bitcoin, and they have this QR code out. And this QR code essentially just, if you scan it, a username comes up, right? Well, it says the username in letters as well. And if you scan the QR code, what does the QR code say? Is it the username specifically?
So the QR code is a link to a web page.
Okay, wait. Okay, yes, you're right. So let's one thing at a time. So everyone here, or a lot of people, have a username. So if you have someone's username, you can very easily ping that person. Because it is custodial, it's just, you know, the wallet has a ledger and it just changes the ledger from me, if I'm buying a pupusa, to the pupusa shop lady. And that's why, you know, it happens within 3 seconds, which is kind of nice when you're on the go. And even if you're not on the go, it's just a little bit awkward to stand in front of a shop for a minute, finding a path.
I will also say that if you use, you know, Wallet of Satoshi or Strike Wallet, we're connecting with those wallets, right? We're connecting with other wallets that are often used here in a way that, you know, the transaction will be the fastest if it is, you know, from Bitcoin Beach Wallet to Bitcoin Beach Wallet. But Bitcoin Beach wallet to wallet of Satoshi should also be very fast, because basically the server of the Bitcoin Beach wallet and the server of wallet of Satoshi have, the Lightning node have a direct channel. And so it will also be fast.
Right, yeah. So in that case, pathfinding isn't a big deal. It's just right there.
There is no pathfinding, basically. It's like, immediate payment. And so maybe if you had some experience where the, payment was much slower, it's probably that, the node was, not directly connected to us. And this is where, things can take a bit more time.
Yeah. So let's get back into the trade-off side of things. The trade-off here, besides the trade-offs we mentioned, the fact that it's custodial and you're trusting whoever is holding the keys, the other trade-off here would be privacy.
Yep.
Whoever's running the wallet, I guess that would be whoever's running the wallet server, right? They could tell that I just ate a pupusa.
Yeah.
Right. So that's another trade-off that you're making for convenience sake in this case. And I'm sure you've had a lot of complaints about this in El Zonta. There's a lot of privacy activists.
I'll share a funny story about this. So when you make a payment, you can add a memo to the payment, like, hey, I'm pupusa and I like the pupusa, thank you. And the way we've been thinking about it when we start the memo feature is that, okay, like memo should be private, right? Like, so if I say, hey, I have pupusa for the memo, it's just, to remind me that I, this $2 or $5 payment is for pupusa, right? But basically, we had some actually feedback that, hey, the memo is not shared. Like, who wants the memo to be shared? Because I want to send a payment to someone and tell him, hey, I sent you $10 for, for the pizza that we ate yesterday. And today they don't like the fact that it's not been shared, which is interesting, right? Like, and probably the reason why they don't, think about privacy too much, it's important to imagine that just most of the user today, like this is their first, bank account, if I can call it that way. And like they're discovering, internet money, for them it's magic, right? Like the notion of privacy is not the top of their mind. Actually, the utility function is much higher on their mind, and therefore, like, they, privacy, they don't really care so far, and they actually prefer to share information, right, when they send a payment, for instance.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I do think privacy is very important. Don't get me wrong. It's just also clear to me that people here are probably fine with whatever can help them at this point, and this seems to help them. But do you have any idea of how that, do you have any plans to improve that somewhere on the priority list? Are there ways to improve that? Maybe not. Account system is just not private, and that's just, that's just a trade-off you're making here.
Yeah, I think it's, if you're using a custodial, like if you want privacy, you should not use a custodial wallet, I think is a way to think about it.
Well, I mean, there are like the Xiaomi and Cash type of solutions that might be applicable here in some way or another. They probably are, but we should talk about this maybe after the episode. that's probably an option, actually. What else? Oh, yeah. So the QR codes we just mentioned. So someone's username, it's very easy to pay that person. It happens instantly, which is nice. If you also have the Bitcoin Beach wallet. Now, if you don't have the Bitcoin Beach wallet, there's this QR code. This QR code is not a Lightning address or anything. So yeah, you already sort of started mentioning that. So what is it?
Yeah. So the current QR code that you can see on most of the tienda here or the restaurant is basically a web page. And the current web page would be ln.bitcoinbeach.com/tiendamaria. And so if you scan this QR code with a QR scanner, it will open a web a page on Safari. If you use an iOS, and you will have a Lightning invoice that you can pay.
It's a uniquely generated Lightning invoice in that case. So yeah. So either you have the Bitcoin Beach wallet, in which case it's very easy to make the payment, or you have another Lightning wallet, in which case you need to scan the QR code, open that in a web page, and then you get a unique Lightning invoice there. Yeah. And then you can pay that with your whatever wallet you have, right?
Yeah, so it's really a two-step process. It's not ideal. And if you were to try to scan this QR code directly from the weight of Satoshi, like, it will say, hey, this is not an invoice. I don't know what this is. And it will fail.
Yeah, that's what happened to me on day one. It was a little bit confusing at first, but now I get how it works. And it makes sense, actually. It just, you need to know that that's how it works. And it helps if the person that's holding up the QR code speaks the same language as you. Otherwise, you're lost. But it's not compatible with all wallets, I think, right? Or there are some incompatibilities.
Yeah, and some of the issue with the way we generate the invoice is it's currently a amountless invoice. So like when you open the web page, you would
an amountless invoice.
Yeah. So an invoice that doesn't include an amount, meaning it is a sender. It is up to the sender to set the invoice. No, it's not the recipient. Have not set the invoice by the time the invoice has been created. And the reason it's causing issue is like up to maybe 18 months ago or 2 months ago, it was insecure to create an amountless invoice. I know it's secure, but like some wallets, don't accept a amountless invoice. So like if you try to pay, I believe this invoice with Strike, for example, like it will say, hey, I don't know how to pay this invoice.
So wait, so first of all, before, maybe explain why you want, why amountless payment? What's the point of an amountless payment?
So.
Or an amountless invoice?
So you can see a amountless invoice like traditional on-chain, address, right? Where like you will pay to this address, but typically there is no amount associated to it, right? And if you have an on-chain address, you will send the sender defined how much money should be sent, not the recipient. And so you can have both a amountless invoice or like an invoice with an amount. Like both options are possible. And maybe I can talk about why it was not secure before and it's secure now, and maybe some why it would be the reason why some wallets don't accept amountless invoice still today.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm still trying to find out why would you want to use an amountless invoice as well? I think it has something to do with pathfinding, right? Wasn't that a reason or routing?
Nope.
Oh, then I just made that up. No, you were telling me the other day over a beer. you're doing something unique with pathfinding, and there was some incompatibility.
Oh yeah, the probing.
Yes, exactly. Doesn't that have to do with amountless?
Yeah, probing payments? Is something else actually.
Oh,
all right. We can talk about probing.
Yeah, we'll get into probing as well. Well, okay, so first, let's one thing at a time. Amountless invoices.
So the first, I guess, version of Lightning invoice was you add a hash in the invoice. And this is the only cryptographic element that you have in the invoice. And so let's say you have Alice and Bob and Charlie. And basically, Alice wants to pay Charlie and Bob is an intermediary node. And so the issue with just a hash is that, let's say Alice wants to send 1,000 sats to Charlie. So Charlie generates a amountless invoice. And Alice initiates the payment saying, hey, please send 1,000 sats to Charlie through Bob. And maybe Bob will take 5 sats in fee. And so Alice will send 1,005 sats. Bob will take 5 sats. And Charlie will receive 1,000 sats. Right? This is a normal flow.
Mm-hmm.
But here, the reason it can be dangerous is that basically, Charlie doesn't know how much money to expect from Alice because it's not in the invoice. And so Alice could send 1,005 sats and Bob could take 1,000 sats and say, hey, Charlie, please take these 5 sats. It's a payment I receive. And basically, the node, typically the last hop, before the recipient, like could take as much money as they want if they try to see if like sending less money would work, right? So this is why it was insecure before.
Right. Yeah, I've seen some wallets reject, or maybe not rejected, but at least throw up a warning sign.
Yeah.
So that this is why they're throwing up a warning sign, but other wallets just reject it outright.
Yeah.
Okay, and this is because, so you just explained the problem. This used to be a problem, but you're saying this problem is now solved, or?
Yeah, it's, if you use, so if you generate an invoice with now you, with new invoice, like since at least on LND, I believe LND, I mean, 3 or 4 version of LND, maybe LND 0.10 or along this line.
Well, when was this?
Maybe more than a year ago, between a year and 18 months ago, I will say. No invoice, not only generate a hash, but also a payment secret. And basically the hash will be known by every party along the route, but the payment secret will only be known by the recipient, by the and the sender, right?
Right.
And because this information is not shared between intermediary node, like basically the last hop, you know, cannot made up information because then the last onion that will arrive to the, you know, to Charlie in that case, like he will know that something is wrong basically because there is no new cryptographic element that has been added.
I see. Yeah. So Lightning always used, you know, the hash that's passed around on each step, and now apparently there's another security.
Yeah, there is a payment secret, what it's been called, and
right.
And if you create an invoice with a payment secret, you know, then amount-less invoices are no longer unsecured.
Before we get back to the episode, I want to tell you guys about Bitcoin Magazine. Bitcoin Magazine is the oldest publication covering Bitcoin, and we've been covering Bitcoin since 2012. Y'all, I'm so proud to be working for Bitcoin Magazine. We spend all day trying to scour the internet for the top news, the top plebs, the top subjects, conversations, everything that has to do with BTC, the asset, BTC, the culture, BTC, the revolution. We are here for it. We are here for BTC and BTC only. And we want to give back to the Bitcoin community. Hit us up if you want to contribute. And go follow us on Twitter. Go subscribe to this podcast. Go follow us on YouTube. All of the places that you can find Bitcoin Magazine, we are there. Instagram, Reddit, everywhere. We're there. We're there. Follow us for the best Bitcoin knowledge. Back to the episode.
Okay, so I think I understand where my confusion is coming from now. My confusion, so yeah, you've got the amountless invoice. What that means is not that it requires me to send 0 satoshis. What it means is that I can fill in my own, the amount of my own preference. That's what amountless invoice means.
Yes, correct.
Right. Nicholas, see, I was confused because we were talking about two different things, and these two different things turn into one thing in my brain. But okay, so yeah, you're hanging this QR code in the store, you're scanning that, you're getting, with your QR code scanner, you get onto a web page that has an amountless invoice from Lightning, amountless Lightning invoice, which means that now you can enter the amount yourself and make the payment to the Papoosha shop. And now everyone's happy because you had a great Papoosha and the Papoosha shop got paid, even if I didn't have the Bitcoin Beach wallet.
So is it the place where I'm supposed to make a back joke?
Yes, this is where the pun comes in. All right. Okay, that part is clear to me. Now, there is another sort of futuristic idea. It's not that futuristic, but another idea you were thinking about moving forward. Because right now, basically, you speculated about this concept where the username system right now works very well, and that could maybe be expanded across custodial wallets, at least, right? Or shared custodial wallet too, like yours. So maybe explain how that would work or how you would see that working.
Yeah, so the first thing is, like, the username, people love it here. Like, it's very useful because, you know, they know the username of their friend and they can easily send them money. It's really magic, right? If you're living in the US, like, you know, you have PayPal, you have Venmo, you have Cash App. Like, it's not something new, but here it's something very new and useful for the people using the Bitcoin Beach wallet. But the downside of this is that it's also a very centralizing force. It's, you know, it means that, hey, you need to have this wallet, right? It's not great because, you know, it forces, you know, more people to use this wallet and not another one.
Or... Yeah, there's strong network effects at play. If your friends have the Bitcoin Beach wallet, they're going to want to use the Bitcoin Beach wallet instead of the Bitcoin Forest wallet from the community next door. And ultimately, everyone's using a Bitcoin Beach wallet because network effects are strong, even in the Bitcoin Forest.
And then you end up with one wallet, you know, that rules the world, and that's not, you know, the place you want to be.
Right.
It's not what Bitcoin is about. And so I've been thinking about this, and I think there could be a way to be able to send a payment, you know, from a wallet to another wallet. And let's say...
Using the username system.
Using the username system. So, you know, let's say I want to send a payment to a Strike user, and I am using the Bitcoin Beach wallet. And the idea is that if you think about a non-custodial wallet, it's like one person, you know, have one node. It's not shared. But if you use a custodial wallet, you know, the principle of a custodial wallet is that there is one node, but there is like many accounts to this node. And, you know, here in our case, you know, we can identify each account with a username. And so the idea is the following, like you can send a payment with something like Keysend or AMP today, where so I could send a payment from my node to like Strike, for instance, push payment, and in the payment, I would say, hey, you know, please pay this username, please pay Aaron at Strike. The way it would work is, okay, Bitcoin Beach wallet will initiate the payment and send it to Strike. You know, it's known which public key the Strike node is, so I could push to a payment to the Strike node.
Yeah, which Lightning nodes on the Lightning network, essentially, through the public key that's published. So, you know, a company like Strike, for them, it's public, which public key, which Lightning node is actually theirs.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. So that's what you're sending the payment to directly in that case.
Yeah. And so you send to a node, but here in the, basically in the payload of the payment, you can say, hey, you know, please credit Aaron, you know, 1,000 sats. You know, the way this could work is that if, you know, and this is so far very, you know, it's at the ideation stage, like, you know, there will need to be a spec for this. But, you know, I can describe the idea of how this would work. And so, you know, the Strike wallet will receive this payment and say, oh, do you know this user? Yes, I know it. Okay, so I will credit, you know, 1,000 sats for this account for Aaron, right? And to make it work, you also want to make sure that if the wallet receives some money, but they don't know the user, you know, like they should like refuse the payment, obviously, because otherwise, like the sender will send money and, you know, the recipient will not credit anyone, and that will not be good. But that's probably one way to be able to basically have a username system that is compatible across wallets. And I believe that would be, you know, awesome to have. So far, you know, there is no equivalent. If you think about the traditional fiat system, like, you know, with Cash App and Venmo, you know, you cannot send money from Cash App to Venmo even if you know their username, right? You have to use the same wallet. And the reason you cannot do it is really because there is no shared, you know, ledger between, you know, Cash App and Venmo. But on Lightning, you could.
I think you might not even need that, thinking about it. Like, you could just, you know, in my wallet interface of Bitcoin Beach, it could just say, you know, send 10 sats to Nicholas on Strike. And then, you know, the Bitcoin Beach wallet knows to send this to send a 10-sat payment to Strike with this message. And then Strike will look into their own ledger if there is indeed a Nicholas there. If so, it gets credited the 10 sats. If not, it's just returned to sender. And, you know, that's really all you need if you think about it, right? I think you don't even need a shared ledger between the wallets necessarily.
Oh no, you don't. You know, I was describing, you know, in the fiat ecosystem, like, you know, I mean, and the reason it will work is that because on Lightning, hey, you can push payment, right? You don't need to share the ledger. This is exactly the point. Like, you can use Lightning to go from one wallet to another wallet, which is the magic of Lightning, obviously.
Yeah. So that's a potential future idea you're thinking about.
Yeah.
Let's get back to, so I already mentioned the pathfinding issues or challenges? Because this is currently not compatible across all wallets. So maybe you can explain what are the differences or what are the problems there?
Yeah, so some other issue we are facing and we are working on is related to probing. So we do probing to have like more precise accounting for the fees. And so what is a probe? A probe is like, if I want to pay from the Bitcoin Beach wallet to, let's say, a Moon user, I will basically, to know if I have liquidity, a probe is I send a payment to this user, but instead of using the hash of the invoice, I invent a new hash. And so let's say,
First of all, maybe actually the previous VanWeerum Sjorsnedo episode was about pathfinding and routing. So that's short enough ago that I still remember some of it. And what Joost Jager explained is that most wallets, or at least LND, I think, they have this system where they map out the entire network and they have information about the channels on the network. And based on this information, they calculate the cheapest route to the destination, where cheapest means literally cheapest fees, but it can also factor in reliability of the channel. And what else? There was another factor.
There is a time period for which...
Exactly. The timeout. So that sort of factors in and it calculates one cost. And that's how one node routes a payment to another node. And I think right now what these nodes do is they basically specify a maximum fee amount that it's allowed to cost, that a payment is allowed to cost. So your own node, if I'm making a payment, it knows how much I'm willing to pay for it. It calculates a route, sees if there is a route available for that cost. If so, it picks the cheapest one. Maybe that one will fail. It tries the next cheapest one and it keeps doing that until it hits sort of the roof or the limit of what you've said, that what I said that it was allowed to cost. That's how it sort of works right now. And probing is an alternative to this. Is that a good way to describe it?
It's not an alternative to this. Probing uses pathfinding. Mm-hmm. Probing is a way to know which pass will work in advance.
Right. So instead of there are 10 different options and I just gave a max, probing allows my node to tell me exactly how much it's going to cost.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. So how does it work?
So it's like you do a normal payment, but instead of having the hash of the invoice you want to pay, you create a new hash, like a random hash, a fake hash if you want. And so you're still trying to pay the same node, the same amount, but because it's a fake hash, when the node receives the payment, they should say, hey, like, I received this, but I don't know which hash, is it. I don't have the pre-image of the hash, therefore I will reject this payment. But if you receive an error message that say, hey, this node rejects the payment for this fake hash, you know that eventually you reach this node. Therefore, you know that there is liquidity for this route. If you have another message that is, hey, sorry, I cannot go further in the path because there is no liquidity, you know that this path you try to pay is not working, and then you try another one, right? And so this is how probe is working. And the reason, you want to do probing is like, if you want to charge, only the fee that is you have to pay on the Lightning Network, but not more fees than that, like, probing is the best way to do it, because now you will know exactly in advance of a payment how much it will cost if successful.
Right, but so this is how the Bitcoin Beach wallet uses it to make payments, I guess? Or also, is it also relevant to receiving payments?
So it's only relevant to making payments.
But this is not compatible. This is not... Chimbera is trying to distract me at the other side of the glass. This is not compatible with all wallets right now, right?
So one of the issues that we are facing is, for instance, the Moon wallet, it doesn't really work today. So the probe is failing because Moon wallet does actually what we talked earlier, today about, like they open a channel on the fly and they have a way to manage this. And they also create a new pub key for each invoice being created. So they have like a way to increase privacy for the user, but as a result, probing doesn't work. And therefore, like payments are failing if, you know, currently you want to send a payment from the Bitcoin Beach wallet to the Moon wallet. And we try to solve this issue, but it's not an easy issue to solve.
Right. So that's another trade-off of using the Bitcoin Beach wallets, that is not compatible with all other wallets.
Yeah, not yet.
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, my goal, and I believe it's the goal of, you know, most wallet providers, is like we want to increase compatibility across each other. It's just that the Lightning space is very interesting in the sense that you can experiment. You know, it's not like Bitcoin, which has a very strict set of rules. Like on Lightning, it's a lot more, you know, you can try anything you want. You know, and some other wallet might work with it, some other wallet might not work, which make it very interesting. Obviously, we don't want to diverge in a way, like, you know, wallet are not compatible between themselves, right? Currently there is still, you know, work to do to basically have better integration between different wallets.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned this, but my experience with the wallet has been positive. I like it. I like that you're here, that you're actually, you know, trying to experience what people are, well, yeah, trying to see what people are experiencing with the wallets, what problems they have. It, you know, the trade-offs are also there. You know, they're privacy. We mentioned that the privacy trade-offs, the custodial trade-offs, but it's definitely the easiest wallet to use right here, at least. And I think it kind of makes sense, I think, in this context of a village that's adopting it, of a specific community that's adopting it. And I think you're now, the wallet is open source, correct?
Yeah.
And the idea is also that this format, this way of doing Lightning, in a way, it's a third layer now, right? At least if you use the username system, it's like a third layer at this point.
Yes, correct, yeah.
We're talking about Bitcoin layer 3, people. That's how advanced this podcast is. And the idea is that other communities, maybe like Bitcoin Beach, but in other places of the world, could adopt this type of system, could use the open source code, you know, smack it on top of their own logo, or other way around, smack their logo on top, smack the Bitcoin forest logo on top, or the Bitcoin volcano logo inland, and have their own local versions of the Bitcoin Beach wallet.
Yeah. So it's open source software, so anyone can use it. I expect, you know, in a couple of years to have 100, if not 1,000 of those, you know, community around the world. And maybe it will be, you know, small community, large community. It can be cities, it can be, you know, state, it can be enterprise, you know. So anyone that wants their own wallet, you know, could use what we have built.
All right. Nicholas, thank you. Let's hear one last pun from you.
Come to Elzonte, experience, you know, Bitcoin Beach.
There you go.
All right.